Hey guys, before we get into the podcast, I wanted to let you know that we're launching Barbell Medicine Plus so that we can expand on what we're doing with the podcast, the website, and beyond. Now, over the past 300 plus episodes, Dr. Baraki and I have tried our best to be one of your go-to resources for legit, evidence-based health and fitness information. But now, with your help, we want to do more. Barbell Medicine Plus subscribers will enjoy ad-free listening, and for nearly all of our episodes, receive access to an executive summary and an article, along with the transcript, a video version of the podcast, and exclusive access to a private forum to ask Dr. Baraki and I questions, which we'll answer on a monthly podcast that's released only to our subscribers. We'll be publishing other exclusive content for Plus members as well, and we've already uploaded a lot of resources for our subscribers and will continue to expand this offering. If you want to support what we're doing and become a Barbell Medicine Plus member, head over to barbellmedicine.com/plus and sign up to be a Barbell Medicine Plus member today. That's barbellmedicine.com/plus. Thank you in advance for your support. Let's get into the episode. When it comes to big wireless providers, what you see is almost never what you get. Somewhere between the store and your first month's bill, the price that you thought that you were paying magically skyrockets. With Mint Mobile, you'll never have to worry about gotchas ever again. When Mint Mobile says $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, well, they mean it. You can say goodbye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at just $15 a month. Now, all plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number, along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless plans with Mint Mobile's deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/BBM. That's mintmobile.com/BBM. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/BBM. A $45 upfront payment is required, which is equivalent to $15 a month. This offer is only good for new customers on a 3 month plan only. Speeds are slower above 40 gigabytes on an unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions may apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Podcast, where we bring modern medicine to strength and conditioning and strength and conditioning to modern medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. This is episode probably 316. We'll see, like Austin 316, you know,
the Stone Cold there. All right.
Yeah. And that silky voice on the other end of the line is the second most handsome doctor in North America, Dr. Austin Baraki. What's going on, man?
I guess I'm on like the West Texas rattlesnake or something today.
Jake the Snake. Yeah. I don't know. You could be like Triple H. You could be who's your favorite? Do you have a favorite wrestler?
I think my parents have like home video of me as a kid pretending to be Hulk Hogan.
Obviously,
but yeah. That is probably not somebody I would identify with anymore, given more recent events and things he's participated in. But
my favorite wrestling moment has nothing. This is embarrassingly late in my life, but when I moved to San Diego, I went to this restaurant called Cowboy Star. Now, if you come to San Diego and you're wondering like, hey, where do I get the best steak in San Diego? It's not Cowboy Star, but everyone will say Cowboy Star, and you can't go wrong with Cowboy Star, to be clear. Also, Cowboy Star is not sponsoring this podcast, but if they wanted to, I'm listening.
You could be bought.
I could be bought. In any case, I see this man who is disproportionately short for the size of his jaw and muscle mass. And it's John Cena running across the street as his Rolls Royce is about to get towed for illegally parking it in a grocery store across the street. And I watch all this go down. Now, I can't hear anything, right? I don't have like the sonar thing where I can like listen in, like watching a football game, you know, or something like that. But I see him, you know, make some hand motions and talking to the tow truck driver. And then he takes a selfie with the tow truck driver, and then his car is subsequently fine. So that's my... That's my wrestling encounter. And I think if I had to identify with a wrestler, it would be John Cena.
There you go.
He also deadlifts in weightlifting shoes, which makes me like him a little bit less. But obviously, you don't see him deadlifting because it's John Cena.
Everybody knows.
Yeah. Everybody knows. Hey, you had a bit of news, you know, like a bit. Like I thought we were going to have a Baraki. Now, this is a mystery case podcast. So this is going to be – but this is not the Baraki mystery case, which I guess you couldn't really do, given that you lived the sort of thing.
Experience of having some acute onset epigastric abdominal pain that was unexplained and negative workup and passed on its own.
Yeah, a real mystery case.
Don't know. Yeah. Sometimes it'd be like that.
Honestly, it should have been a case report, though, because after you had this unexplained, you know, spontaneously resolving sort of abdominal pain, you were able to bench press at a normal exertion and were ultimately fine.
Yeah, I came home and benched 315, and it wasn't for a set of six or something, and it wasn't terribly difficult. So that's my main advice for people when they get discharged: go ahead and go home and train.
Yeah. Did the emergency department staff say anything to you about lifting? Like, hey, just take it easy, or
no?
Okay.
No, only to comment on extremity musculature and vascular appearance when it came to drawing labs.
Oh yeah, they just objectified you. They're like, hey, nice veins. Nice. This past weekend, I was driving race cars in. Have you ever heard Willow Springs? I don't know how in auto. Okay, Willow Springs, Big Willow. They have multiple. There's Streets of Willow. There's Willow Button or Button Willow rather, and then this is Willow Springs, big track. Potentially, depending on the car that you have, you can reach speeds, 160, 170 miles an hour. My max speed was just under 140, which, fast enough, can confirm. Now, I was very curious to collect some data on my heart rate response. Now, I've done this in motocross where my heart rate will start, I'm on the starting line at 90 beats per minute. I'm kind of getting amped up a little bit, maybe 100 before the gate drops, and I'll go to 180 and just stay there for the duration. In a car, but there's a lot of physical effort going on the motorcycle. So that kind of makes sense in addition to maybe the fear and the adrenaline dump and whatever. But in a car, you're just kind of – there's a thermal stress because it's hot in there, right? There's some sort of adrenaline because you're moving fast, and then maybe some fear. Anyway, I peaked out at 155, so I thought that was a more moderate heart rate response. Although I did see this guy, you're going 130, 140 at the end of this straightaway before you slam on the brakes, threshold braking, hit the apex. And if you get this whole thing wrong, you end up in the dirt. And a guy right in front of me just off track, big cloud of dust, spin. And I was thinking that I would get like a little spike. No, nothing. Apparently I'm just immune to that. I'm like, he's probably fine. Really cool experience. If you're into like auto sports, driving, anything like that, 10 out of 10 would recommend a track day. Really fun. And there were people out there in cars like you had a Corolla GT for a while, GT for the discerning. But there's a whole class of these GR86s. They're kind of like, it's Toyota's like little three-cylinder kind of sports car. Those guys were moving too. It was cool. Yeah. The instructor I had actually had it's called a spec Miata, like a Mazda Miata, right? These little cars. And you look at this thing, it's unassuming. You're like, it's just a little kind of thing. I've never been so scared in my whole life. This is a madman, an absolute madman. I'm like, this car doesn't have enough horsepower. It's probably going to be a little slow. Absolutely not. This guy, I mean, I was terrified. Could not believe what he was doing. Yeah. And the guy's like 60, right? And he's just like, and I must, when I'm driving, I'm sure my face, I'm just, chomping at the bit, whatever. And he's just, out on a little cruise. So anyway.
That's what it takes for him to feel something.
That's right. Yeah. At that point, he's like, this is how I get my sympathetic nervous system to respond. Yeah. So good weekend. Obviously glad that you're okay. A few announcements before we get into the mystery case. One, Barbell Medicine Plus is now launched. You probably heard this on the pre-roll, heard it on our last podcast. But this is our subscription sort of podcast service that we're offering. Where you get ad-free episodes, you get transcripts, you get executive summaries that we write ourselves, you get video content, you get a private forum to ask us questions that we answer on a dedicated AMA. Pretty cool subscription platform that we're using. So you can go to the podcast page on our website and sign up there or check the link in the description below. Also, this is the last call for our pain and rehab seminar, live in-person seminar in Atlanta, two-day seminar. It's worth CEUs. If you're a pain and rehab professional, if you're a personal trainer, if you're a strength enthusiast, this would be for you. So check that out. Also linked in the description below. And of course, we have a bunch of free resources on our website, new calculators for 1RM, for your total daily energy expenditure, for macros, if you're interested in counting those sort of things, all for free on our website. Just go to our website, barbellmedicine.com, click on About Us and click Resources. It's all free there. You can check that out. All right, Austin, it's mystery case time.
Let's go.
I'm forced to do this. And this one, again, I've said it before. I've never been right, but this one, you're gonna get it. I'm pretty sure you're gonna get it. We'll see though. All right, 28-year-old male presents to the emergency department with progressive weakness and inability to move both legs, so much so that he could not walk or stand up from the bed upon presentation to the hospital. The patient says this started about 12 hours ago, and he's never had this before. 5 days ago, the patient said he participated in a bodybuilding show with no issues at the time. Since then, he said he's been eating a lot more than what he did leading up to the show, and he's gained about 10 kilos in weight. That's 22 pounds. He denies the use of anabolic steroids, dietary supplements, or recreational drugs. He also denies having any fevers, recent sick contacts, or recent illnesses, no trauma, no nausea, no vomiting. So before we go on, and the listeners at home, if you want to stop and play along, this is the time to pause the podcast where you can develop your differential and check out your thought process and compare it to Dr. Baraki's. But I pose the question to you, Dr. Baraki, any thoughts on this particular patient before we move on?
Sure. So to summarize what we've got so far, 28-year-old guy, we'll find out if he has any medical history here in a little bit, but he's coming in with what I'm going to call acute progressive bilateral leg weakness. And I'm deliberately using each of those words to kind of qualify and help me narrow down my thought process, that it is acute weakness itself automatically narrows down the list of possibilities of things that could be going on, that it is progressive, and that it is bilateral, meaning both legs are involved, also serves to narrow down either the location of where this disease state lives in his body, or what all could be going on. So weakness that I've talked about before can be something that localizes, meaning it's like one arm, one leg, one side of your face or some other, local neurological function, in which case we tend to worry about things a little bit higher up, like in the brain, or if somebody has a particular problem with the nerve, the single nerve that serves that function. But when we have symmetry, it tends to push us a little bit further away from the brain in most cases. There are some rare niche scenarios where you can have symmetric, issues from something affecting both sides of the brain or in certain strategic areas of the brain. But for the most part, when I have symmetric bilateral, both legs, I'm thinking about something from the spinal cord and kind of below spinal cord, the nerve roots, the nerves, the, neuromuscular junctions, the muscles, et cetera. That his arms are not affected also narrows me down to the thoracic spinal cord and below, because if it was higher up than that, we'd expect all of his extremities to be involved. And so I'm concerned about whether there could be something going on from the neurological standpoint, from the cord, the nerve roots, the nerves, the neuromuscular junction, the muscles, et cetera, serving those legs. Or the other possibility is that it's not necessarily a neurological syndrome, but it's more of maybe something like a metabolic syndrome, like we've talked about before in patients who had severe electrolyte abnormalities leading them to develop symptomatic weakness. That tends to affect everywhere more so than one particular area of the body, like just the legs and sparing the arms or things like that. But sometimes these things are progressive and they might be most noticeable in one area first before they manifest elsewhere. So really, I'm just thinking about what are all the things that we need for our muscles to be able to function. Obviously, they need to be, healthy. They need to be innervated. They need electrolytes. They need blood flow. They need oxygenation, things like that. So I'm thinking about all those factors that would lead his leg muscles to work and how can those things break. So the first place my mind goes with acute progressive weakness is something neurologic from the thoracic spinal cord all the way out to the muscle versus something metabolic going around in his blood leading to impairments in his muscles ability to kind of depolarize and contract.
Nice. Yeah, that's a great sort of summary of your differential, kind of where you're starting at. Now, for your edification, this patient has no known past medical history, and he has no family medical history that he can report. But let's get into his exam, get some labs, get your sort of wheels turning on this. So, vital signs, his blood pressure was 130 over 70. His heart rate was 100. His respiratory rate was 20 on room air. He was afebrile. No fever. The patient appears well-muscled, but he does appear anxious, lying in a hospital bed. He is alert and oriented, and he's able to participate in the exam. His head and neck exam, including thyroid palpation, was normal. His neuro exam, musculoskeletal exam, was significant for 2 out of 5 strength bilaterally in the lower extremities. He had some pain when participating in that exam, but his passive range of motion was normal. He had mild tenderness to palpation over both anterior thigh compartments. His upper body strength was, according to your intern, within normal limits, and his distal pulses were intact in both the upper and lower extremities. Now, laboratory-wise, his metabolic panel was significant for low potassium, 1.8, normal range for that 3.3 to 5.1 for this particular lab. He had elevated glucose to 129. His phosphate His phosphorus was also low at 1.4. Normal is 2.7 to 4.5. Had an elevated creatine kinase to 1580. Normal is 0 to 171. His lactate dehydrogenase was also elevated at 252. His myoglobin, they measured his myoglobin directly, apparently, and that was 313. Normal is 23 to 72. But otherwise, his creatinine and his other electrolytes were normal. His CBC was normal, and he had an arterial blood gas. He had an arterial blood gas that was also normal. Now, before we go any further, any thoughts on this particular patient?
Sure. So we didn't really get much background history as far as, aside from this syndrome that brought him in, what he's been doing aside from apparently eating a ton ever since his bodybuilding show, mainly in terms of his training. So I'd be curious, I'd ask him a bit more questions about, has he actually been training during this week? What's he been doing? What was his last physical, you know, exertion activity looking like?
Sure. He has done no exercise since the show. He's just been hanging out, pretty much eating for the last 5 days and otherwise just chilling.
Amazing. So this guy's exam, his vital signs don't really get my attention too bad. He's, you know, a little bit tachycardic, or his fat heart rate's a little bit fast. His respiratory rate is approaching being a little bit fast. I'm just kind of noting those, but I'm not, you know, fixating on them too much. And then his exam is not showing us much that's surprising or new based on what we already heard, that he has some diminished strength in his legs. His arms seem to be okay. And he has some mild tenderness over his thighs, perhaps, you know, some muscular pain, maybe related to, you know, some soreness from his last activity, or something that I'll get to in a little bit. So when it gets to his labs, as I mentioned, having a potassium that's low, similar to what we've seen in some of our other cases, can certainly cause muscular weakness. It really impairs kind of like the electrical gradients across your muscle cell membranes and makes it much more difficult for your muscle cells to depolarize and then for your muscles to then contract. So we saw a case before, for example, of hypokalemic periodic paralysis manifesting with just diffuse whole body weakness in a patient who I think had like a high carbohydrate meal and in the context of exercise, and that leads to this just acute onset generalized weakness syndrome that can also be associated with some thyroid type disorders. The thing that's a little bit different here is that this patient also has a very low phosphorus level in his blood, which is not something that we see as often in the context of that hypokalemic periodic paralysis syndrome. And so phosphate is also another very important electrolyte in the blood for a lot of reasons, but it is one of the elements of ATP. The P in ATP, or adenosine triphosphate, which we use for energy, is phosphate, and we need plenty of that in order to regenerate ADP into ATP. So when people have hypophosphatemia or low phosphate levels, that can impair the person's ability to regenerate ATP, and that ATP is actually necessary for muscular, you know, resetting and contraction. And so, you know, patients with severely low phosphate levels can effectively go into like rhabdo, rigor mortis-esque type syndromes because you need ATP to actually release the actin-myosin cross-bridging and then cycle over and over again if you're a muscle physiology nerd. And so that is something that kind of gets my attention here, that this guy has not only severe hypokalemia, low potassium, that could be mediating some of his weakness, and he also has this very low phosphate that could also be mediating it. And so the combination of them together can explain weakness, can explain, I won't say he has overt rhabdomyolysis, but he does have these elevated markers of muscle breakdown, including the CK, the lactate dehydrogenase, and the myoglobin, despite the fact that he hasn't trained, I guess, in about a week since his bodybuilding show. Unless these enzymes are still kind of on their downtrend from how hard he was flexing and posing on stage a week ago. There's no reason to have checked an ABG in this patient, so I'm going to ignore that for now. So the next question would be, where would we go next? This would be a scenario where the most immediate pressing need would be to fix these electrolytes, because there's some risk not only to his muscles, but more concerningly to his diaphragm function, which we need to breathe when people's phosphate levels are really low, and to his heart rhythms when your potassium is that low. So this would be relatively straightforward to quickly start restoring his electrolyte levels. Now, and then at the same time, trying to think about like, why could this be happening? And so the context that we have is, this was a young guy without any past medical history who presumably had dieted down for a while, got super shredded for his bodybuilding show, went up on stage, probably did some degree of dehydration, some other, you know, measures that these bodybuilders tend to do for their shows, And then he has been effectively binging ever since then, it sounds like. To gain 22 pounds in 5 days is a lot of food. And so, you know, a lot of times these diets are pretty long stretches of time. Bodybuilders tend to diet very, very gradually over longer periods of time to mitigate strength losses. And so depending on the duration and the degree of his dieting, followed by pretty aggressive refeeding, that is what I am concerned about, is that this patient may be manifesting some findings of a condition called refeeding syndrome, when patients have been undernourished for a very, very long time, and then suddenly you just start infusing the person or their gastrointestinal tract, their body, with nutrients to include, you know, glucose and phosphate and electrolytes and all sorts of other things. These can lead to pretty significant shifts in electrolytes and rapid utilization of certain nutrients, and that can manifest with something called refeeding syndrome. I actually have a patient in the hospital currently that I am concerned about. This is an older gentleman with some chronic, you know, diseases, and he weighs about 50 kilograms and hadn't been able to swallow in a while. And so that was a concern of ours. And so in anticipation of it, we had been really aggressively on top of his electrolytes and making sure he had plenty of thiamine and things like that, which is an essential kind of a cofactor for a lot of metabolic pathways. And so that's kind of where my mind is at right now. This isn't seeming to be a neurologic syndrome, like, for example, something going on in his spinal cord. He doesn't have any back pain or any reason for me to suspect a demyelinating disease there. It doesn't seem like a neuropathic type issue or a radicular, you know, type syndrome or a neuromuscular junction disease. And it doesn't seem like hypokalemic periodic paralysis either, necessarily, although that's still in the back burner. But more so, I'm concerned a little bit about a refeeding. And the signal that made me think of that was the dietary context that we heard and the fact that his phosphate is so low.
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Now, Acorns is an investment platform, also have a bunch of educational tools on their website. I thought they had a pretty good product, so thought I would let them sponsor our podcast. They make it easy to automatically start saving and investing for the future. You don't actually need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can start with just your spare change. With Roundups, that's a program that they have to round up any purchase made from a linked account, debit or credit card, to the next dollar. And that goes into your retirement or investment account. They also have Acorns Early, which is an investment account for kids. And they recommend an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. Head over to acorns.com/BBM or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/BBM. This podcast is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. If you've been listening to our podcast for a while, you know that I'd previously been trying to learn French using Babbel, a direct competitor to Rosetta Stone. And while I had a good experience with Babbel getting ready for this trip, Rosetta Stone offers 12 more languages than Babbel, including many Asian languages that Babbel does not. Additionally, Rosetta Stone is offering 50% off a lifetime membership, which is an incredible deal and basically forced me to let them sponsor this podcast. Now, Rosetta Stone is one of the most trusted language learning programs in the last 30 years, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. It's also available on desktop or as an app, so you can learn anywhere. And it uses an immersive experience to help you learn the language of your choice quickly, along with using the correct accent using its speech recognition technology. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Barbell Medicine listeners can get Rosetta Stone lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get 50% off unlimited access to 25 different language courses for life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today and get started. Sweater weather signals that fall is here, along with the holiday season right around the corner. But with the busy schedule, sometimes it's hard to eat the way you'd like to. That's where Factor comes in. Factor is America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service and is much healthier than most takeout meals, which tend to be very high in calories due to both portion size and the ingredients that are used. You can skip the grocery store, skip the prep work, and the takeout trap, and let Factor do the work for you. Factor has options to help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. They're ready in just 2 minutes, and they even have a Protein Plus option to make sure each meal has at least 30 grams of protein in it. This fall, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door. Ready in just 2 minutes, no prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/BBM50 and use the code BBM50 to get 50% off. That's code BBM50 at factormeals.com/BBM50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off next month when your subscription is active. Yeah. All right. Well, let's give you some more information to see if you can make a diagnosis. So one, the patient was started on some IV potassium chloride basically to treat his hypokalemia, which basically was infused over 20 hours, and that improved his potassium level. Now, his CK also went up to a peak just over 10,000 during that, and so he's also given some normal saline for additional hydration. Other tests that you got because you're a holistic doctor and you want to make sure that the patient is cared for his entire body, you got an EKG, and that showed a QT prolongation, inverted T waves, and prominent U waves consistent with hypokalemia. His thyroid testing was normal. He had an X-ray of his lower limbs with no fracture. His phosphate actually came back to normal after the potassium infusion. And so now you have enough information to potentially make a diagnosis, and I will task you with that at this time.
Yeah. So very little of what you told me changes what I thought in the last set after the last set of information. I'm still on the same train. You know, to the extent that we can sometimes see that hypokalemic periodic paralysis in the setting of thyroid disorders, maybe normal thyroid testing makes that a little bit less likely, or that he was maybe, you know, another way that you could get to this kind of a syndrome is if he, for the purposes of dieting for his bodybuilding show, maybe he was like abusing some thyroid hormone to accelerate his metabolism and help him lose weight. That could also cause low potassium levels if he had thyrotoxicosis. That's another way you could get here, except then the question would be like, why is this manifesting now after his show? It should have been earlier, right? So the timing is important for, you know, ruling that type of differential diagnosis out. I wasn't expecting him to have fractures of his limbs, and that things got better when we treated them just reflects that I was probably on the right track. So nothing that you told me changes my mind. I'm still thinking the same thing here.
Yeah. So the diagnosis they gave him was hypokalemic paralysis and rhabdomyolysis induced by binge eating. So effectively, his potassium normalized after just a single dose of 50 millimoles of IV potassium given over 20 hours. Also, he got, again, that hydration with normal saline to treat his elevated creatine kinase. And ultimately, by hospital day 7, he regained full strength, was able to ambulate around the unit, and was discharged. He had no recurrence with this follow-up at 8 months. Any thoughts on the particular diagnosis?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I can't say that I've attributed a syndrome like this just purely to binge eating, but I do suspect that it was also the combination of the binge eating in the aftermath of probably like pretty severe prolonged dieting. And so that just continues to frame the case in my mind. I have a hard time coming away from my thought of like a refeeding syndrome type situation.
Yeah. So in fact, that's actually one of the pearls. We'll get to that here in a minute. But just to revisit this hypokalemic paralysis, we've talked about this before on episode 304. That was a bodybuilder who was prepping for a show, and he was using thyroid hormone, and that, you know, having too high of thyroid hormone floating around your bloodstream, well, that alters the function and amount of the sodium potassium pumps on the skeletal muscle. And so those channels normally remove sodium from the inside of the cell and put potassium in there. And if you get more channels that are more active, well, you get more potassium in the muscle. And so the blood, when you take a blood sample, it shows it has low potassium, which makes it difficult for the muscles to contract normally because that ion gradient is all messed up. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to get this hypokalemic paralysis, by having hyperthyroidism, too much thyroid, or by taking thyroid hormone, you kind of have this surreptitious hyperthyroidism. Mm-hmm. There's also another cause, which is familial periodic hypokalemic paralysis. This can be due to a genetic mutation in calcium channels, sodium channels, and some other things that are less common. The attacks begin in late childhood or teenage years, and they vary in frequency and duration. Also, the intervals, they can go for weeks or months, but some patients experience several attacks per week. The attacks usually last for several hours, but the duration also varies from minutes to days. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, these can be triggered by vigorous exercise, stress, like emotional stress, or even a high carbohydrate meal. Mm-hmm. And there's usually a delay after that. It's thought that maybe the insulin release after these large meals or binge eating, for example, can move potassium into the cells, causing hypokalemia, and you get the same sort of reduced muscle function.
Exactly.
Now, and you get a myopathy kind of as well. And that actually brings me to this next point, is like, well, how did he get rhabdo? Right? If he wasn't really exercising, like, why did it look like he had rhabdo? And it seems like the hypokalemia, so having low potassium, in the bloodstream. Well, that's used for vasodilation of the blood vessels to the muscles. And so when you have low potassium, those blood vessels tend to constrict. And then when you're active, they tend not to dilate like they normally would. So in fact, when you exercise, for example, some floating potassium in the bloodstream tends to locally increase the size of those blood vessels. And if you have low potassium, that doesn't happen. So reduced blood flow to the muscle itself can cause ischemia and increased muscle breakdown. Also, the changes in that cell membrane permeability due to the channel stuff that I described earlier, well, that alters your ability to produce force. And as you mentioned, the hypophosphatemia, not being able to produce as much ATP, you have limited energy. And so the muscle's like, well, dang it, I can't do anything except for, like, you know, necrose.
Rigor mortis and then die, yeah, while ischemic, exactly.
Yeah. Now, as you alluded to, the mechanism that they described here due to binge eating, they basically said what you said, is that this guy was dieting for a long period of time. Likely, you know, if you had this continuum from, like, you know, anorexia nervosa all the way to, like, overnutrition and individuals with excess adiposity, individuals with obesity, well, he was definitely trending towards, you know, anorexia nervosa, and then subsequently refed himself into a refeeding syndrome. And hypokalemia is frequently part of refeeding syndrome, along with hypophosphatemia. And the most at-risk sort of time of for refeeding syndrome is, like, right after you stop the restricted eating. So in individuals with anorexia nervosa, it's like right when you start treating them. In individuals coming off of potentially a bodybuilding sort of prep, right after they finish the bodybuilding show. The most interesting thing here that I don't know that most people outside the medical field would appreciate is that when they hear hypokalemia, they're like, oh, it's just got low potassium, and that's probably in his whole body. And that's not really the case. It's low potassium in the bloodstream in this particular case, whereas his body potassium stores were relatively normal, just got all sequestered into his tissues. Whereas there are other ways to lose potassium and have hypokalemia where your whole body has low levels of potassium. So if you're losing it from your kidney, if you're losing it from your gut, for example, this person would need way more potassium to sort of correct that hypokalemia. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And then the connection to rhabdomyolysis, like maybe why he was more at risk due to the hypokalemia. I thought that was a pretty interesting little pearl there.
Yeah. Yep. All around interesting case, interesting stuff. And you're right that a lot of people, I've talked about this before, that their understanding of what blood tests tell us is, I've talked about this a lot before, very incomplete and flawed. But recognizing that when we draw blood out of a person and we test the concentration of something in their serum or in their plasma, that is the fluid that is not your red blood cells, that your red blood cells are swimming in, that is just like one compartment of your body. And the concentration of that same thing in other compartments may be completely different, right? So the level of sodium or potassium or certain fatty acids or glucose, it could be completely different between your plasma or within your red blood cell or in your tissues or within your body fat or within your cerebrospinal fluid or, you know, or in your urine. And so you have to recognize, like, when I'm doing a biomedical test on someone and I'm sampling a particular area of the body or sampling a particular body fluid. So I do this all the time. What is the best body fluid compartment that I should test this substance in to tell me what I need to know? And so I might test some things in the blood, other things in the urine, other things I might do a lumbar puncture and test in their cerebrospinal fluid, other things I might need to drain some fluid out of somebody's chest or their abdomen and test that fluid to get the answer that I need. And so having that context for interpretation of, like, what is this body compartment? What would I expect? Why am I testing it? What is it telling me? Versus just assuming that, oh, just a blood test can tell you everything about the body everywhere, which is not the case.
Yeah. Are there any other different tests that you would have done to sort of arrive at a more confident diagnosis of this periodic paralysis from hypokalemia? Or would you have been, I mean, it seems like on this particular mystery case, the way I presented it, you got there right away, although you were like, too easy, can't be this. is there some other, like, either, I don't want to say confirmatory test, but like particular investigation that you would have made you feel more confident in basically saying, yeah, slam dunk, this is hypokalemia causing periodic paralysis with rhabdo, probably due to binge eating?
Yeah. So I think that the history was honestly the history, and then that basic lab panel was the most useful thing to get me to the diagnosis here. And I was been relatively confident in that most of the way. I don't think there's any further confirmatory testing that I would need to feel confident in that diagnosis. And I would just be a little bit more particular with the terminology. So when I say periodic paralysis, it essentially implies that genetic syndrome that you mentioned earlier, whereas just Hypokalemia in general can cause weakness or outright paralysis depending on the severity of it. So I would reserve the term hypokalemic periodic paralysis to imply that kind of more genetically mediated syndrome. Whereas these other ones, I would just call this like symptomatic hypokalemia and hypophosphatemia due to likely refeeding syndrome. And I'd be content with that diagnosis, assuming that, you know, I'd give him some electrolytes, some potassium, some phosphate, I'd give him some thiamine, and I would feed him a bit less, let him chill out. And then I'd be satisfied with that diagnosis, assuming that the syndrome resolved and didn't recur in short order after that.
Yeah. The final pearl here has to do with maybe probably people who don't listen to our podcast, but maybe will in the future. So like future listeners, this is for you. If you have prepped for a bodybuilding show or maybe even like a photo shoot or a trip or something, you've been dieting and losing body fat for a pretty long period of time and you get relatively lean and or you've just been exposed to low energy availability for a substantial period of time, there are some risks with like immediately jumping back to, I wouldn't say maintenance level calories, but like very high levels of calorie intake, which would probably be like a duh sort of thing. Like, hey, should I double or triple my energy intake? Like probably not. Like if that's something that you could potentially do, I have concerns over refeeding syndrome, thing one, particularly in the context of like no physical activity also. Now, for individuals with anorexia nervosa, that's a more complicated case, which is why there's like whole criteria for like, hey, who should be admitted during refeeding just to make sure they don't go through symptomatic refeeding syndrome and or if they do, that they're actually being monitored. But outpatient or out in the world, I could see individuals, particularly in a bodybuilding space, where this is a risk. And I'm actually surprised that I haven't seen more case reports on this. Anything you want to say on that?
Yeah, I actually am inclined to agree, especially given the prevalence of what we would call disordered eating in the fitness space. And that disordered eating can swing in and manifest in varying ways from severe restriction to binging and everything in between. And so this guy obviously had a relatively extreme, situation of 10 kilos in 5 days is a lot. And, probably not all, pure nutritional like body fat gain or something like that, some fluid with that. But, disordered eating is far more common than I think people realize in the fitness space. And so, you might expect maybe a little bit more prevalence, or maybe it's just a little bit more subclinical and most people don't actually manifest with such severe symptoms that they seek out care and then get case reports written about them.
Yeah. I do also wonder, have you ever cut weight for a meet, Austin?
Yeah, like once or twice. Yeah.
Yeah. I've done it a few times. In fact, the first one I weighed in at 174. It was my very first meet. 0 out of 10 would not recommend cutting for your first meet. Probably not worth it. Uh-huh. And then 3 days later I weighed 190. So I gained like 16 pounds, in a couple of days. I mean, I didn't have any sequelae of that, fortunately, but I do wonder there's this notion where like after you eat or after you cut for a meet that, hey, as soon as you are done weighing in, eat a lot, drink a lot or whatever. And I do wonder again, in that acute setting, is it possible that people could have such an electrolyte shift, potentially where their performance is compromised secondary to overnutrition? And to me, that strikes me as not only plausible, but I've definitely seen evidence of that. And I can't swear to the fact that it's caused by an electrolyte shift or something like that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Sometimes people do end up having just absolutely terrible meet performances, like shortly after a weigh-in. And a lot of times people just attribute it to maybe the effects of the cut or something like that, but maybe don't think about this as a possibility, which I'll admit I've not routinely attributed it to that possibility either. But, it is interesting that if your potassium is 1.8, your squat's going to go down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously the water, like loss of water and low body waters, that's been more reliably associated with performance. We've talked about that on our hydration episode. So I'd be principally concerned with like restoring water and hydration status in an individual. But also again, if somebody step off the scale and immediately crush, a couple thousand calories and previously that, their energy intake has been half of that per day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility. Maybe live a little bit closer to the weight class you're trying to weigh in at, especially if it's a short weigh-in, like a 2-hour weigh-in, and then, go easy on it. You're not going to win the meet by eating more calories in that short setting, but in fact, you could lose the meet.
Totally.
For sure. Also, don't chug like a bottle of soy sauce. 0 out of 10, would not recommend that either.
Yeah, for sure. I frequently cite one of my favorite case reports, although, I mean, the patient did okay, so it's not like a tragic ending, but some not very smart person who did a soy sauce drinking competition of not low sodium soy sauce and managed to get themselves hypernatremic, meaning high blood sodium levels, and having seizures at a level of like 195 or something like that. Jeez. And they needed to get like 7 or 8 liters of free water infused into them before they recovered. So yeah, definitely wouldn't recommend that. That's a terrible idea.
What do you think the worst condiment would be to have to chug?
Probably that one, because you could make yourself seize and die pretty quickly.
Yeah. I think health-wise, it's probably that. But I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, taste-wise, I could probably stomach a decent amount of soy sauce. But, like, Vegemite? No way. Or, like, mustard? Absolutely not. Mayo, I think, might be the worst. You're just, like, putting it down and just no way.
Yeah, mayo would be my nightmare. I mean, I'm a big fan of mustard, so I could probably do that, but not mayo.
Yeah. Ranch? I could do ranch. You know, sure. That speaks my Midwestern sensibilities.
There you go.
All right. Well, that's been a wrap here on The Mystery Case, episode 316 with Dr. Austin Baraki. Special shout out to Dr. Baraki for spending some time with us on this podcast. Before you guys go anywhere, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps drive traffic to our podcast so we can keep hearing you all the latest nuance in health and fitness. From everyone here at Barbell Medicine, I'm Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. We'll catch you next week and every week right here on the Barbell Medicine Podcast. Hey guys, before we get into the podcast, I wanted to let you know that we're launching Barbell Medicine Plus so that we can expand on what we're doing with the podcast, the website, and beyond. Now, over the past 300 plus episodes, Dr. Baraki and I have tried our best to be one of your go-to resources for legit, evidence-based health and fitness information. But now, with your help, we want to do more. Barbell Medicine Plus subscribers will enjoy ad-free listening, and for nearly all of our episodes, receive access to an executive summary and an article, along with the transcript, a video version of the podcast, and exclusive access to a private forum to ask Dr. Baraki and I questions, which we'll answer on a monthly podcast that's released only to our subscribers. We'll be publishing other exclusive content for Plus members as well, and we've already uploaded a lot of resources for our subscribers and will continue to expand this offering. If you want to support what we're doing and become a Barbell Medicine Plus member, head over to barbellmedicine.com/plus and sign up to be a Barbell Medicine Plus member today. That's barbellmedicine.com/plus. Thank you in advance for your support. Let's get into the episode.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.